Welcome to the Shiny Brightly Show. I'm Howard Brown, author, speaker, Silicon Valley entrepreneur, international peacemaker, and yes, a two-time stage four cancer patient survivor and advocate. Each episode will take you from resilience to hope and a whole lot more, because shining brightly does make the world a better place. Be prepared to be inspired.
Hello, it's Howard Brown, Mr. Shining Brightly. Oh, I got a great show for you today. We are going to go and learn. We are going to learn about grief because it is part of the cycle of life. And I have Jason Harris here, cool new guy I just met. Jason, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy about being here.
Oh, so I'm glad to hear you. We're going to motivate, educate, and inspire, but we're going to teach some people today. And I'm really happy that you're here. Let me tell you, Jason's an impressive guy. So let me tell you a little bit about him. So Jason Harris is an esteemed celebrant. You're going to learn what a celebrant is, and a visionary founder of Morning Into Dancing. With his groundbreaking book, Good Grief, Celebrate Your Life, he's revolutionized the landscape of funeral service, infusing them with a unique blend of laughter, warmth that resonates deeply with families. Through his role as a trusted advisor to funeral directors, Jason addresses prevalent issues such as the decline in prearranged funeral planning and the prevalence of mediocre funerals, and offering invaluable solutions to prevent burnout, enhance family healing, and the funeral experience. It's just really, really important because I have to tell you, this resonates with me. And why I wanted Jason on this show is that I work in the cancer business. I am a patient advocate and a patient expert. And unfortunately, in colorectal cancer, Jason, this is going to be astonishing. 152 or 3,000 diagnoses this year. The number one killer for men under 50, number one killer for women. Breast cancer is still the number one for women under 50. That means 100,000 people are going to be in treatment. Why? Because one third, 53,000 people in the U.S. will die from colorectal cancer this year. That wow. means there will be grief and loss and mourning and weighing, you know, seeing, you know, how to put your life back together again when you lose a family, a friend, a coworker. So we're going to talk about that. But before I do that, tell me something we may not know about you.
Well, I have five kids. And when my second child was being born, right before she was delivered, the nurse midwife turned to me and she said, "Would you like to catch?" And I panicked and I said, no. And so I didn't. But then I thought, that would have been so cool. And so the next daughter I had that was born, we made it a part of the plan. And I can literally tell my daughter, "I brought you into this world." Wow. I got to cut the cord on all of them, but to literally deliver my child, Emily, was a true blessing to me. It was awesome.
So my daughter is also Emily, okay, my one, and I cut the cord and I watched her come into this world, but I was not the catcher. I was right there, though, right there in the action, right? But I had the box seat for sure. Wow, that's just a beautiful thing. That's that. Now we're talking right now bringing someone into this world in life. Give me that's a little background. Tell my audience and listeners about you and how you got into this line of work.
You know, it's fascinating, and it's a great question. I went to Bible college and seminary. I was called to ministry when I was about 18 years old, became licensed and ordained, and I was off and running with a lot of excitement. And I've been in youth ministry. I've led worship. I've been an associate pastor. I've been a pastor, a church planter. And all of that. And so in all the years that I was a pastor of a church, it's the expectation if one of your parishioners die that you do the funeral. The pastor is just expected to do the funeral of one of your church members. Now, fast forward about 17 years ago, I experienced a lot of tragedy in my life, a lot of failure. And I was actually out of ministry for a while. And I got into sales, and fast forwarding really fast into, I became a really good salesman in windows and siding and home improvement and things like that. And then I moved back to Texas. So I knew I was going to need another sales job. I was unmarried. And I saw this ad for pre-need funeral arrangements, pre-need funeral insurance. And be honest with you, Howard, my initial reaction to that was, that sounds morbid. That doesn't sound very fun at all. And so I kind of pushed it aside for a while, but it became, you know, probably my better option. And so I went to hear about this pre-need funeral insurance. And I was so intrigued by what it was that I thought people would be crazy not to pre-arrange their own funeral. It just saves so much heartache and emotional trauma and everything for someone to have to make 100 decisions on the worst day of their life when someone passes away. And so I got really good at the job. And then the company I worked for said, we'd like for you to be our East Texas market sales manager. And so my job was to start working with about 50 different funeral homes all across East Texas. Well, word got around that Jason also has a ministry background and can do a pretty good funeral. And so I started being asked to speak at funerals for families that didn't have a minister or a church or whatever. Well, there was a brand new aspect to this. Almost all of the funerals I was being asked to do was for someone I didn't know. Most pastors are asked to do a funeral for somebody they know. And so how am I going to lead a life celebration? Because that's the way I view funerals, Howard. Not as some traditional, sad, somber, morose occasion that so many traditional funerals are. I believe that we should really celebrate someone's life. And so I thought, how am I going to do that if I didn't know them? And I didn't want to pretend like I knew them. So I came up with five questions. And these five questions, if I can ask as many family members as possible, friends, put the questions out the night before the service, like at visitation, it's not only going to be a very personalized eulogy and service. What I never get tired of hearing, I've heard from a dozen funeral directors, Jason, we've never heard so much laughter coming out of our chapel than when you do services here. And you know what? I'll take that. I loved it the first time I saw a funeral director literally peer in from the back of the chapel to see what in the world is going on in there, because why is everyone laughing? Why is that? It is a funeral, right? But there was laughter. Now, there's also tears, but, you know, laughter through tears happens to be a very healing emotion.
Yeah, this is really interesting. One of the things that we were talking back in the green room before the show came on is that you're telling me that many folks in pastors and ministers, they get very just a small taste of training on actually how to conduct a service, a funeral service, which many do call a celebration of life. I'm not sure why that is, yeah. But it's really important. We come at it from, you know, different ways, but in the Jewish world, the rabbi who's doing the service typically, doesn't always have to be a rabbi, but they do typically sit with the family members and they're trying to think about their entirety of a life, their impacts, their interests, some of the things that they made mistakes with, you want to talk about that. And what we say, at least in the Jewish world, is may their memory and name be for a blessing, because you don't even have 144 characters on a tombstone, right? What are you really going to remember them? So when we speak of someone that has passed, we are honoring their memory. We are honoring their name, and they want you to say their name and things like that. So to me, one of the striking things you told me in getting to know you is that there is relatively very little training for that in being a pastor and a minister. But you've taken this to a whole nother level. This is now your calling. It's really great. Do you want to talk about the five things that you do?
Absolutely. Yeah, as a matter of fact, that's been so revealing for me that not only was it my experience that I had only one lecture, not one course, one lecture on funerals that was coupled with also doing communion and baptism and weddings, but it was just really about protocol. And so, but not only is there not training for how to really help a family celebrate the life and then follow up with them in the aftercare, another very important part that we'll talk about in a moment, but people in general are not really, I mean, did you take a course in high school about helping your grieving friends? No one is really instructed on grief support. And so you have the other side of this where you've got an entire community of people that all they really know are common cliches that you say when you find out your loved one passes. And they'll say something like, well, at least they're in a better place, or at least they're not suffering, or whatever.
No, they'll say sorry for your loss. That's
yes.
Basically the standard is sorry for your loss, right?
It's almost like saying, how's it going?
Right.
But it's our vernacular when someone passes. And so both sides really need to be educated. And that's why I'm very passionate with mourning into dancing. But yes, the five questions that I ask that that I've, you know, if you get the book, you'll see four different applications to these five questions. And the first one is very simple. I want to know, what did you call this person? And so if someone has passed away, many times, sadly, the pastor is given an obituary about 15 minutes before a service starts. And so they read the obituary, sometimes badly. They stumble over names and sometimes mispronounce names, but then you never hear the name again. They'll preach a sermon on heaven or something like that. And so when my grandmother, my father's mother, passed away 25 years ago, if someone would have just read the obituary and talked about Mabel Lee Harris, I would have thought, okay, that's my grandmother's name, but I called her Mamaw. And so I want to know a term of endearment, a familiar term, a term that's music to our ears. We love the sound of our loved one's name, but we also love the sound that we call them. And so I go by my middle name. My actual name is Nick Jason Harris. But if somebody just was handed an obituary at my funeral and they would just assume that everyone calls me Nick, and everyone would be looking at each other like, who's he talking about? And so that's the first thing. And by the way, when I share the answers that I harvest at the eulogy itself, I instruct the crowd that is gathered, look, we're going to use our imagination and not think of this place as a funeral chapel, but rather a giant living room. And we're going to sit around with this family and we're going to celebrate their mother, their sister, their whoever the person is. And we're going to celebrate that person. And, you know, at first they're all looking like, okay, what does that look like? Because they're used to just coming to a funeral, sitting sadly and somber, and there's no participation. But by the second question, which is, if you could describe this person with only one word, what would it be? And I'm asking for one word. I'm not asking for a speech. And so, and I've already got in my manuscript the answers from the family members that I've already asked. And they might say, my mother was fun. And they might say, she was disciplined or whatever. After I read all the answers that I've harvested, I'll look out at the crowd and I say, now, what are we leaving out? I just want you to raise your hand and shout it out. And it's like popcorn all over the chapel. The family gets to hear these beautiful adjectives rain down on them, that she was amazing, she was beautiful, she was funny, she was serving, or whatever. And then some, so you feel the room kind of relax, and some start to feel the freedom to, you know, plant their tongue firmly in their cheek and say, she was sassy, or she was stubborn. And people start to chuckle. And the room just, it starts to shine brightly. It's beautiful. It starts to light up. By the time I get to the third question, tell me one of your favorite memories of or with this person. And that's where the laughter begins, because most people that I ask that question, the favorite memory is when something crazy happened, when something audacious happened, when something was just so bizarre. And the laughter is fantastic. And I'll give you an example. The first time I started using these questions, I asked a woman whose husband had just passed away, and they had been married for 26 years. And I said, what is one of your favorite memories of or with your husband? And I was expecting her to talk about either their honeymoon or a cruise maybe that they went on, or some big elaborate story. And the very first thing that fell out of her mouth after she looked up and smiled, I knew she had accessed a great memory. She said, well, first of all, we've got a very steep driveway. I thought, okay. And she said, I once watched my husband ride an office chair like the one I'm sitting in right now, out the garage door, down the driveway, and across the street, just to see if he could do it. And it took me all of 7 seconds to say that story. And you've got a big smile on your face and you're chuckling and you have no idea who this man even is.
No.
But to repeat that story at his life celebration in a room full of people that knew he was a, hey, y'all, watch this kind of guy. They were holding their sides and they were rocking in their chair laughing. tears coming down their face because they could see him doing that. And so I love that. And then some people even have the freedom to share a couple of other stories, and it's all very organic. Mm-hmm. And then I wrap up, the last two questions are simply, give me a life lesson that you gained having had this person in your life. Very profound answers there. Someone might say, you know, I saved my money because of my grandmother. You know, she was born during the Great Depression, and she, whatever. And, or, you know, they'll share something, some way that their loved one impacted their life, changed their life by their demonstration. And then finally, I ask, if he or she could speak to you just one more time, what would she say to you now? And oh my gosh, that's a very emotive question. And that's where the waterworks usually come on. But all of it, the family feels completely embraced, not only in memory, but in the essence of who their loved one is. And it's a celebration.
I really appreciate that. I will, you know, obviously there's way more detail in your book, and we'll talk about that too. But in chapter one of my book, it's the lessons I learned from my immigrant grandmother, Bubby Bertha, Buddhist. And she came from Lithuania, could have been Ukraine, it was Russia. She called it Rushy. And she spoke seven languages. But I remember as a little kid, she talked to us about kindness, choosing to be kind, choosing to be giving, choosing to be healing, choosing to be grateful, and choosing not to hate. And that's the first chapter of my book. I just gave away the first chapter of my book. And that's powerful. And the one thing that our whole family does, I'll just share this because it relates to what you're saying, is that she said that found money, I'm talking finding a penny, finding a dollar, finding $20 bills, is not your money. It's God's money. And mm-hmm. we put these in what are called Jewish piggy banks, called tzedakah boxes. And we as a family still do this today. Mm. We do this. We take that, we put the found money in, and it goes to someone in need. It's a beautiful, beautiful story that she basically, that was her rule of law. That's called tzedakah, or the justice of giving. And it's ingrained in our whole family. And wow. So when that story was told, everybody was going, yep, oh yeah, and you did it. And then you told her you did it. And it was really a blessing. So I resonated with those questions as well. And I think that, you know, you're trying to, you know, there's no right or wrong, but you can still grieve, you can cry, you can feel emotional, right? You're not taking Absolutely. Away any of that, but you are bringing some information and important the life's journey together, and people are there are some really funny and crazy stuff that's happened, so it's good to appreciate that and acknowledge that as well. And is this what you would call part of the healing process, this right there?
Yes, I would. But there's another aspect that I really want your listeners to grab hold of, and that is the truth that the family gets the most support when they feel it the least. And that is at the funeral service. That's, we kind of have the whole grief support system flipped on its head. And that is, you know, so everyone comes to the funeral. They'll take off work. They'll make arrangements so they can be there for this family who's grieving. But the truth of the matter is the family at that time, they're in denial. They're in that stage of grief where they're just sitting there through blank stares trying to, especially if it's an unexpected death. If they have a loved one that was killed in a car accident, they just, with everything was fine a week ago and now they're gone. They're sitting there in this surreal fog, just trying to think, am I going to wake up? This has got to be a bad dream. Meanwhile, everyone is coming up to them saying, I'm so sorry for your loss. And they're hugging them and things. And so most families feel abandoned after the funeral, because for maybe a few days after the funeral, people bring casseroles or they'll make phone calls or whatever else. But even then, the grief support tends to be over the top cliche. And so, but after a couple of weeks, all of it dies off. And that is about the time that the reality is setting in. And that's when they need you the most. And so a couple of things I would encourage your listeners with is something I started about 5 years ago, is a tangible reminder to stay on the journey with the family. And so I started making these match boxes. They look like this. Yeah. And I can get a 10 pack from Walmart for 97 cents. And there's a label on one side that is a picture of a loved one that had passed away. This lady passed just a year ago this month. And on the back are some things that represent things that she loves, but it's just a personal tangible reminder. What I do when I get up at the end of the service is I'll say, on behalf of this family, I want to thank everyone for being here, but I'm going to tell you something you may or may not know. They don't really know that you're here today. That's why the funeral home gives them a book with all of your signatures in it. So they can go back and say, oh, wow, I didn't remember her being here. Wow, they came all the way from Louisiana or whatever. But they don't know you're here today. It's in a couple of weeks that the reality is going to set in. The first tsunami of grief is going to just knock them off their feet. And that's when you're going to be back to work. So please take one of these matchboxes home. Put it in your kitchen junk drawer, because I know you've got one. Some of you have three. And I want you to keep it in there. And this is what's going to happen throughout the year while this family is going through all these firsts. First birthday. Sunday is Mother's Day. By the way, if you know anyone who's lost a loved one this year, remember that this may be their first Mother's Day without mom, without the grandmother, without a son or daughter. But besides that, every holiday, every Thanksgiving, every whatever. But if throughout the year you just go to light birthday candles or a dinner candle or a fire in the fireplace or a barbecue pit or whatever, or if you're just going for that pair of scissors or roll of tape and you roll that junk drawer out and you see her looking up at you, you don't need these to remember her. We're all going to remember her. But reach out to her daughter. Reach out to her son. Reach out to her brother, to her husband, to whoever in the family. And I want you to say, remember those matchboxes the weird bald guy gave us at your grandmother's funeral? I don't remember his name. We thought he'd never shut up. But we just use those matches today. And I just want you to know, we sure miss her. And you have no idea what that means to get a random phone call out of nowhere to say, you're not alone. We're on the journey with you. And that's one of the most important things you can do. Don't tell somebody, just call me if you need anything. They're not going to do that. Don't call somebody 2 weeks after death and say, how are you doing? Nobody wants to answer that question. It's not a good, but if you just want to say, you know, nobody made barbecue ribs like your dad, and I'd give anything to have some of those ribs again. I sure miss him, and I know you do too. I'm thinking about you, I'm praying for you, or whatever. Stay on the journey. Sorry for the long monologue there.
No, but it's the matchbook. It's a great thing, because you can light a candle and then pass it on and tell them, you know, God, I thought about your mom, your dad, your sister, your brother, your friend, your coworker, and this is what it reminded me of. That's special. That is really honoring their memory and their name. So I love it. It's really, really important. It's really important. So a couple of the key takeaways that you spoke really quickly, and people will talk about the book in a second, but it's really important, some of that planning. I mean, one of that is a really important job, an important point about making some of those arrangements and your wishes known. And even for, you know, I'm going through a loss with my mother-in-law now, and there's just there was no will. Her wishes were not known. And so we're making assumptions. We're doing what we feel is best and right, you know, to honor her and to her memory, and also handle her estate and things like that. So it's very interesting. The other thing is that you're right. You're in the moment and you're numb. And it's not until like a few weeks later that you got to get back to work and back to your life. And that's when you're really trying to process and heal. So really excellent points. I appreciate that. Let's talk about your book for a second. Good Grief, Celebrate Your Life. Mm-hmm. And tell us about how it, there it is. You're holding it up. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. And it's available, I'm sure, on Amazon. And tell us a little bit about how you got the book put together.
Well, since these five questions began as just a way for me to write a meaningful eulogy for someone I didn't know, the next application for it took me by surprise, and it happened very organically. I was flying somewhere. I was unmarried at the time, single for about 5 years, so I was everywhere I went. I was by myself. And so if you're sitting next to me on the airplane, I am that guy that is going to talk to you. And before we ever pull away from the gate, and I've already asked you, are you coming or going? Are you visiting friends or family? What do you do? And when they reciprocate and think, okay, this guy's not going to shut up until I talk to him, almost everyone that I tell that I I'm a certified celebrant. That's a fancy word for a guy that speaks at funerals, but it's my passion and I love helping people with grief support. 9 out of 10 people, as soon as I tell them that, immediately say, wow, where were you 2 years ago when my mother died? They will tell me about someone that they've lost. And the first time that happened, the thing that naturally fell out of my mouth was, do you mind if I ask you a few questions about your mother? And I've never had anybody say, no, I don't want to talk about her. They brought her up. And so I began asking the 5 questions. And this perfect stranger who I didn't know just 20 minutes ago is opening up to me about their loved one. And we're laughing together. And by that 5th question, we're both crying together. And that's real. It's genuine. And I get text messages, Howard, sometimes 3 hours after we land, from someone saying, you have no idea how much I needed that. Now, I tell you that story because the first time that happened, I thought, wow, I kind of have something here. I know that I had these questions for writing a eulogy, but what just happened back there was so organic and so beautiful and so meaningful. Isn't that a much better way to respond to someone who says, I lost my mother 2 years ago, than, oh, sorry for your loss, how about them Cowboys? And I'm going to change the subject because I'm suddenly very uncomfortable with your grief and I don't want to say anything that might make you cry. Because you do that, you got nothing. You let them talk about their loved one and you've got healing happening and it's amazing. And then the more I thought about that, I thought there's other applications to these questions. And I would love to tell your listeners about it right now, but I don't want to spoil it. But that's why it happened to be just about the eve of my 51st birthday. I was on Valentine's Day, 2020. We all remember what was happening on February of 2020. We were all told to shelter in place and we couldn't go anywhere. And so I looked down at my little dog and I said, Chewy, I'm going to write a book. And he looked back up at me and he said, okay. And so since I didn't have anywhere else to go, I was unmarried. And since I had my dog's permission, I began writing just as fast as I could think of each chapter. And within about 6 weeks, I had the book written. And so I was sharing different chapters as I was writing them to people that I knew had lost a loved one that year. And I just asked, I'd love to get your feedback on some of this. And one of them was a widow that had just lost her husband. And I actually kept her endorsement in the book. And I won't read it to you right now, but I had other people telling me after the book was written, I've read books about grief before, but I've never read anything quite like this. Because it's not going to sound like a textbook. It's going to sound exactly like you and I are talking right now, Howard. I wrote it in the vernacular of a conversation with a reader. In fact, if you read this book, the book's dedicated to you. The book is dedicated to the reader and in the memory of any person that you have lost. And so it's dedicated to you and your loved one. So I had a great time writing the book. My favorite chapter is about the lessons from a hobbit, a grief dog, and a box of matches. And so you've already heard about the box of matches. You'll just have to read about the hobbit and the grief dog.
Yeah, it's a good tease. It's a great tease. Well, this is really important. I think this is why I brought you on, is that I've never met a celebrant. Maybe I have, but they were in the form of a pastor or a rabbi or a minister or just a friend. But I appreciate that. This is important. It's part of life. And we, the living, need to carry on, in that memory. So I'm going to ask you to put on your sunglasses.
All right.
Put on your sunglasses, because this is the Shining Brightly Spotlight. Jason Harris, tell people how they can get a hold of you and then leave us with a little bit of inspiration, and I'll kick it back to me to close out the show.
That sounds fantastic. And yes, you won't believe the domain name that was available to me when I created my website. It's called speakerjason.com. And my passion, I love to do public speaking. I'd love any opportunity to do a keynote at any kind of a convention or anything like that. So speakerjason.com, there's a link in that website that'll take you to the book. The book's also available on Audible as read by the author. And so you can find it there. And then of course, I believe that Howard's going to show in the show notes how you can get in touch with me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, and things like that.
Absolutely. So hit me up with some inspiration to close out the show.
Well, it's so important. Like I said, the most important thing you can do for anybody is just to stay on the journey. If you're ever wondering what to say when you wrap your arms around someone who's lost a loved one, is to get close to their ear and simply say, you're not alone. Don't say any of the cliches. Don't say anything that starts with at least, and let them know that you're going to stay with them on the journey, because grief is a journey. Grief never goes away. It's as unique as our fingerprints. So you can never say to someone, I know how you feel, because you don't. You just need to let them know that you're there and that they're not alone, and you're going to stay with them on the journey. So it's so important to do that.
I love it. Healing is happening. Thank you, Jason. So this has been a very informative show, and maybe not what people had expected, but you can check out me at shiningbrightly.com. I want to give thanks to my publishing house, Front Edge Publishing, also readthespirit.com, and the people from Amplify You, my podcast team, that make me great and look great and sound great every week. So thank you. And at shiningbrightly.com, you can learn about me as a speaker, me as an author, and me as a podcaster, but also more importantly, my advocacy in the cancer world, the entrepreneurship and mentorship world, and in the interfaith world, which is very, very important to me. So remember, if you choose to keep shining brightly just a little bit each day for yourself first, and then go lift up others, the world will be a better place. Jason Harris, Celebrant, thank you for being here. And I really enjoyed this show. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed this episode of Shining Brightly with me, Howard Brown. Come interact with me at shiningbrightly.com. And remember, keep on shining.